Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Nedarim Daf Samach Vov. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage, and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins from the top of Daf Samach Vov. You'll notice a Mishnah. On the side of our marked Gemaras, you'll notice a topic heading we call the Nosei, and it reads, Neder Shehuter Mitzosei Huter Kulo, a vow that was partially absolved results in the entire vow being absolved. In order to appreciate that, we will learn the Mishnah with its examples and understand this a little better. You'll notice we have a long Mishnah, and the section of the Gemara that follows it is quite a bit shorter. And then, if you continue looking down the page, you'll notice the next Mishnah is also quite long, with the Gemara that follows going till Amud Beis. But we continue now with the Mishnah at the top, Poschen b'yomim tovim u'b'shabosos. In order to appreciate that, the word Poschen, of course, means the scholar, the Torah sage that's approached for the absolution of one's vow, starts or opens the vow, literally speaking, absolves it using Shabbos and Yom Tov as a basis. What do we mean by that? So we take a look at the run at the top line, Poschen b'yomim tovim, shomrim lo, we tell the client, the individual seeking absolution, Ilu ho'yiso yodea, had you known, she'osu litztayer b'shabbos, that it's prohibited to experience suffering or restraint on Shabbos, Hoyisa Noder, would you have made the vow? Iomar Lav, if he responds, no, I wouldn't have known, I wouldn't have made the vow, Matirin Oso, then we release him from the vow. We continue now with the Mishnah, Borishona, at the beginning, Hoyu Oimrim, it was said, Oisun Hayomim Mutorin, Ushar Kol Hayomim Asurin. That if a person vowed, let us say, for the next month I'm not going to partake of some type of food that one enjoys. So part of the month you have Shabbos, and you also, if it's a holiday month, you'll have a holiday days. So originally the vow would have been released in a partial fashion, whereby we would say, you know, you vowed that for the next 30 days you're not going to eat roasted chicken. Do you know that part of that time there's Shabbos and Yom Tov? And as we saw in the Ran, he would say, had I known that I'm not allowed to mitzta'er on those days, I wouldn't have vowed. So they would have released him from those days, but the weekdays, the rest of the month, the vow would have still been binding. That was what originally was done. Ad shebo Rabbi Akiva v'limed, until Rabbi Akiva came along and taught the following principle. Shaneder shehuter mitzaso, a neder, that a vow that was partially absolved, huter kulo, the entire vow is absolved. The Ran on the third line from the top says, shekol neder shehuter michlolo, huter kulo. Yalfino lo b'yushami, this is derived in the Yushalmi, the Jerusalem Talmud, midichtiv, the pasuk says, kechol hayoytzim mipiv yaseh, that in one, when one vows, he has to do according to everything that came out of his mouth. The mashma dafka b'shikulu kayim, that implies that only when the entire vow is intact, then he is bound. Therefore, if it's partially released, so then nothing remains. The Rosh, in his commentary, you'll notice in the lower part of the page, about halfway down the Rosh commentary, Shaneder Shutum Mitzosutu Kulo, Afalpi Shalomotso Pesach Al Kulo, even though the scholar did not find a way of absolving the entire vow, the Lo Nodar Meikora El Aldas Shiniskayim Kulo, But nevertheless, since when the person initially made the vow, he did so thinking with the intention that the entire vow would remain intact. Nimso hatoras miksoso pesach lukulo. The result of that is that when you release part of the vow, that's already a deviation from the original intent, and as a result, the whole building, so to speak, falls down. That's the whole vow is absolved. That's nimse hitarta miksosoi pesach lukulo. Now we continue in the Mishnah. Ketzad. And here the Mishnah gives us examples. Omar klinim sheini nene lekulchem. A person vows that he is not going to benefit from all of you. Huter echod mehem, if one of them is absolved, hutru kulan, then he is allowed to benefit from all of them. Sheini nene loze veloze, if a person says, I am not going to grant benefit to this one and to this one, and he lists people off one after the other in that fashion, as opposed to in example one where it was an entire group. Here he enumerates, I'm not going to grant benefit to this one and to this one and to this one. Huter harishon, hutru kulon. If the first one, the first person is vow is released or absolved with regard to the first one, so all the rest of the people that were enumerated are also now released from the vow. It's, if you can imagine, a row of dominoes, so that when the vow was stated, it was, we'll say, built upon the first person identified or enumerated, and when he is released, so then all the others, being that they were patterned after the previous one, so when the first one is released, the second one being patterned after the first one, the third one patterned after the second, once you release the first one, then all the rest are released. Hutar achron, if the last person in the list of individuals that was restricted from benefit, if he is released from the vow, ho'achron mutir v'kulon asurin. Only the last one is released, but all the previous ones remain subject to the vow. She'ani nehene loze korban, v'loze korban, tzrichin pesach l'chol echod ve'echod. If a person says that he is not going to benefit from, or he's not going to grant benefit to this one, and he uses this language, korban, loze korban, veloze korban, it's as if he's spelling out an entire vow text individually to each person. This is different than the case we saw before of loze, veloze, veloze. The Rosh, on the second of the widest lines, says loze korban veloze korban b'gemor muki lo k'Rabbi Shimon. In the Gemara, this Mishnah will be set up in accordance with the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. Domar gabi shvus apikodon. Rabbi Shimon appears in the context of the vow taken in the case of an entrusted item to be watched. And here the Rosh explains the background to that issue of Shavuas HaPikadon. Hayu Hamisha Toivinoisai. A person was sought, charged, or five people came to collect from him. V'kofar v'nishba v'hoida. He was sought after, and initially he says, I don't owe you anything. And he swore to that effect that I don't owe you anything. And this was repeated five times. Five different people who were seeking collection from this guy. And he denied and swore to that effect and then confessed. De'eno chayov al kol echod korban. He will not be guilty of bringing or obligated to bring a separate sacrifice for having lied in his vow, ad sheyoimar shvuah l'chol echad ve'echad, until he says, Shavua, he swears to Mr. 1, and then Shavua to Mr. 2, Shavua to Mr. 3, etc. If, however, he would simply say to the five guys, Shavua, I don't owe you anything, in a group fashion, so he's guilty only of one sacrifice for his false oath. But if he says, Shavua, I don't owe you, Shavua, meaning I swear I don't owe you, Shavua, and he individualizes it in that fashion, then he'll be chayev for each vow, a separate sacrifice, which is the obligation of one who swears falsely. Av Rabbanan Kamri, im omar Shavua lo lecha velo lecha, have a prata v'chayev al kol echad v'echad. According to the Rabbanan who disagree with Rabbi Shimon, they say even if you don't repeat Shavua, I swear to you that I don't owe you anything, and I swear to, well, even without that, if he merely says, I swear that I don't owe you, and not you, and not you, in that fashion, without repeating, I swear to you, that itself is an individualizing of the offense. And v'chayev al kol echad v'echad, v'adin hocha. Likewise, over here, in our Mishnah, im omar, lo lozeh, v'lo lozeh, kol echad havi neder b'fnei atzmo. If a person would say, she'ani nene, or she'ani nene, I will not benefit, lo lozeh, v'lo lozeh, v'lo lozeh, that would be considered, according to the Rabbanon, a separate vow. So, in our Mishnah, what's the language of our Mishnah? He says, she'ani, or depending on the girsa, she'ani nene, lozeh, korban. V'lozeh, korban. That is, as the Rosh says, according to the Gemara, that is in the spirit of Rabbi Shimon's approach. And hence, the Mishnah says, if a person speaks thusly, tzrichin pesach l'chol echad v'echad, a separate absolution with regard to each individual will be necessary. The triangle marking, you can see on the side under the Nosei Mivneh heading, Havlotas Dugmois Doimois Shekinim. We're highlighting the two similar examples that the Mishnah gives with a vowel using the expression Kinim, which we've seen many, many times. The double underline highlights the expression Omrulo. Mituar Odom, we're going to describe a person, Shinoder Alpi Hanachar, Havona Mesiemes. Person had vowed, assuming a certain premise, and afterwards, after he vows with this, with his assumption, he's then informed that there's a partial error in his assumption. Now, let's apply it practically in the Mishnah. A person imposes upon himself through a vow a restriction upon wine, that he will not partake of wine because wine is bad for your digestive tract. People told him, but aged wine is actually good for your digestion. Huter b'myushan. So the vow regarding the aged wine is not binding. Velo b'myushan bilvad huter. And not only with regard to the aged wine, Ela b'chol hayayin, but rather with regard to all wines, there is no longer any vow. Botzol. Koinin botzol shani toim. He vows not to eat from onions. Shabotzol ra lalev. Onions are bad for your heart. Omrulo halo hakufri yafel lalev. And then he was told, but the kufri type onion is good for your heart. Huter b'kufri. So that the vow with regard to the kufri is certainly not binding. It was a neder based on an error. V'lo b'kufri bilvad huter. Elo b'chol habsalim. And not only with regard to the kufri type onion is the vow released, but it is released with regard to all onions as well. Maise hoya v'tiru Rabbi Meir b'chol habtzom. An incident like this happened, and Rabbi Meir declared that he is permitted to partake of all onions. the Gemara. We open with a quote from the Mishnah, Huter ho'achron, ho'achron muter v'kulan asurin, and the Rashash points out that you have to really keep reading on in the Mishnah to the point that it said, She'ani ne'ne lozeh korban, and v'lozeh korban, etc. Tzrichin pesach l'chol echad ve'echad. Now, the Gemara asks, Man Tana, who is the author? And we take a look at the Ran, and what we're going to be seeing might remind us of that which we already saw in the Rush. The Ran says, Man Tana, demi dekotoni, loze korban, veloze korban, where a person had vowed not to benefit this one, as if it were a sacrifice being the example of something that's prohibited, and he used this language, lozeh korban velozeh korban srichen pesach l'chol echad ve'echad, a separate absolution for each individual is necessary, alma deli'olam lohave proto elo ki midkar korban akol chad v'chad. There's an opinion then in this Mishnah that it's not considered an individualized vow unless you add the word korban for regarding each person. Ha'lav hachi, had it not been like that, rather, lo shno amar lozeh v'lozeh bevov, I'm not going to benefit from, I'm not going to grant benefit to this one and to this one and to this one. Oy lozeh lozeh, or he says, I'm not going to grant benefit to this one, each time referring to a person or people that were standing in front of him, and he said, lozeh, velozeh, meaning this one and this one, below vav, without a vav. So there's no difference whether the vav was attached, the vav means and, the vav was attached to each word or not. Either way, klola have, it's a group vow. Uman Tana, who is the Tana that does not make a distinction, and all vows would be considered group vows. And when we say a group vow, so as we saw before in the Rosh, if a person violates it, in the case of a Shavua, he would be chayv only one korban, because it's all grouped together. So who is the Tana that says thusly, that only if you add a complete expression like korban lozeh ve'korban lozeh, or as we saw in the Rosh before, shvua lo lozeh, shvua lo lozeh, I don't owe you, and he swears I don't owe you, I swear I don't owe you, down the line. Uman Tana, who holds like that? Omar Rava Rabbi Shimon hi. That is Rabbi Shimon's approach to language of vowels and the division of the vowels into individual units. The Yomer Perak Shuas HaPikadon, who says in Masechet Shuas Gabi Hoyu Chamisha Toivin Oso, this is the same example that we saw in the Rosh, where someone was being seized upon by five separate people claiming that he owed them money. The Omar, and the person who was being claimed from responds, Lo lecha, the lo lecha, or lo lecha, lo lecha. He swears, I don't owe, not you, not you. Do you lo ilameinu chayav, I'll call echad ve'echad. He is not, and he turns out, of course, to be lying. He's not considered in violation of separate vows. Ad sheyoymar shvua, unless he adds that word, I'll call echad ve'echad. Ha'olav hachi, without adding that key word, shvua, lo lecha, shvua, lo lecha, down the line. Without that, bein bevav, bein below vav, klola havi. Whether the vav is added to the lecha word, or the vav is not added, it is considered one general vow. And if it turns out that he was lying with regard to each person, he's only in violation of one vow, resulting in only one korban, even though he was denying to five different people. So now the Gemara continues. After asking the question, who is the author of our Mishnah? Omar Rava, Rabbi Shimon, he. This is in accordance with Rabbi Shimon, the Omar, who said there in Masechet Shavuos, Ad Shiyomar Shavua Lechol Echad Vechad, that he's not considered guilty of individual oath violations unless he said the word Shavua initially to each one when he was denying the debt to each one, or the denying having in possession, in his possession, their items. Koinim yayin shani toim chulei. The Mishnah said that when he is informed that the aged wine is good for his system, so we said that is the basis of releasing him from the vow. What was his initial vow, though? His initial vow was, I'm not going to drink wine because wine is bad. It's negative for the me'ayim, for the digestion. What if he was informed by the people that the miyushan is not bad? Basically, the miyushan is neutral. Without saying that the miyushan is positive, is good, would it not have been enough to absolve him of the vow by informing him, contrary to what he thought, that the wine is bad, by simply informing him that the wine is neutral, it's not bad? That's what the Gemara now asks. The Tapok lay, could we not have concluded that the vow was mistaken, the Ein Ra, that the wine is simply not bad? Why did the Mishnah emphasize that, contrary to what he thought, that the wine was bad, the wine is good, meaning it's positive? Omar Rabbi Abba, V'oid Yofe Kotoni. Rabbi Abba is saying, in fact, our point is well taken, that to undo the vow, it would have, in fact, been enough to tell him that the Mishnah is not bad. And as far as our Mishnah is concerned, all it's saying is, let's say, an additional piece of information that, and by the way, it happens to be good as well. If we look in the Ran, in the lower part of the Ran commentary, V'yoyd Yofe Kotoni, Chado, first of all, the Ein Ra, the Mishon, contrary to what you thought, it is not bad. Uba Hachishori, and that's really enough to absolve him of the vow. The Ein Sorch Lomar, Keshu Yofen, it goes without saying that the vow would be absolved if the Mishon was actually positive, was actually good. The Gemara continues, Koinim Botzel Shanitem Shabotzel V'chule. Now the same idea that we had with the wine is referred to with regard to the Botzel. The Tepukle De'ein Ra, could the Mishnah not have established that the vow regarding the onions is not binding because the Kufri onion is in fact not bad? Omri Biabo V'ulid Yofe Kotoni. You're right. It would have been enough to absolve him of the vow by realizing that the Kufri is not bad. And furthermore, it goes without saying that the vow is absolved by the fact that the onion is actually good for the heart. The Mishnah. Poischin l'odom b'chavoyd atzmo u'b'chavoyd bonov. If a person had, let us say, vowed to divorce his wife. This is the example that you can see in the Rosh. The Mishnah continues, Omrim lo, we tell a person that vowed to divorce his wife. We say, Ilu ha'yisi yodea, had you known, Shelamocher omrim alecho kach, he vesto shel ploni, megarish es noshov, that so-and-so is the way of your, so-and-so is the temperament of this guy, that he divorces his wives. He's a wife divorcer. V'al b'noisecha yu omrim. And regarding your children, they will refer to them as b'nos grushos hein. They're the daughters of divorced mothers. Ma ro b'imon shelelu lizgarish. What did this guy see so faulty in their mother that he divorced her? This is what we inform the vower people will say. The Omar and the vower, upon hearing this, responds, Ilu ho'isi yodea shekein lo'isi noider. Had I known that this is the way things would be, I wouldn't have made the vow. Hare ze muter. That is an acceptable absolution. Kainim shani yonoseus plonis. Ke'ura. Man says, I vow not to marry so-and-so. She is ugly. Vare hino. And it turns out that she is not ugly. She is pleasant. She is pretty. She's attractive. Or he vows, I'm not going to marry her because shora, she is black. Vare he levona. And it turns out she is white. Kitsora, he vows not to marry because she is short. Vare haruka. And it turns out that she is tall. Muter ba. He is allowed to marry that woman. Lo mitne shehi ke'ura v'nasis no shchoy v'nasis levona k'tzor v'nasis aruka. Not because she underwent some change, that she really was ugly and became attractive, she was black and became white, she was short and became tall. Elo shehaneder tos. Rather, simply because his neder, his vow, was mistaken. It was mistaken from the outset. From the time that he vowed, he thought she was one thing, if she really was something else. Umayse ve'echad shenodar mipasa choyso yanoy. There was an incident where a man vowed not to benefit his niece. Ve'chnisua le'beis Rabbi Shmuel, v'ipua. And she was then brought to Rabbi Shmuel, and he made her attractive. Amar lo Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel said to the man, "Beni mizuna darta. From this one you had vowed, this beautiful woman. Amar lo lav. No, not from someone, not from her. Fitira Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Shmuel absolved him from the vow and allowed her to be married to this man." At that moment, Rabbi Shmuel cried out of mercy and compassion. V'omar, benois Yisrael nois hein. The daughters of Israel, Jewish women, are beautiful. Eloshanius menavlosan. It's only that their impoverishment makes them unattractive. Ukshmeis Rabbi Shmuel, hayu benois Yisrael noisis kino v'imros. And upon the demise of Rabbi Shmuel, the daughters of Israel raised forth a dirge and proclaimed, "Benois Yisrael, how Rabbi Shmuel b'cheina." Jewish girls over Rabbi Shmuel cry forth, "V'chein hu Omer b'Shol." And similarly, you find with regard to Shol, King Saul, "Benois Yisrael el Shol b'cheina." The pasuk is quoted on the side, and by quoting the whole pasuk, you'll appreciate the similarity between the story we saw with Rabbi Shmuel and what took place with Shaul HaMelech. So we glance at the side, the starred note. We have a pasuk from Shmuel Beis Perak Aleph Pasuk Chav Daled, "Benois Yisrael El Shaul Bechina Hamalbishchen Shoni." From this pasuk, you see that Shaul HaMelech used to provide for Jewish women silken garments with golden adornments that were added to them. He cared for the attractiveness of the Jewish women folk. The Gemara asks, upon looking at this Mishnah, we seem to have Maisa Listar. A Maisa is featured in this Mishnah, in a story that seems to contradict the principle that was taught beforehand. Now, let's take a look at Rashi to appreciate what is bothering the Gemara. So we're looking in Rashi toward last fifth of the Rashi commentary. Maisa Listar, the Reisha Kotani im Hoyanoa Mikora. The Reisha says that if the girl from whom he vowed, concerning whom he vowed, stating that she was ugly, was actually attractive from the outset, Dave neder betos. That's a mistaken neder. Avlim nasis no ayadei kishut. However, if she really was unattractive initially at the time that he vowed, but through some procedure, through cosmetic treatment, or jewelry, she was made attractive. Kagon hachta Rabbi Shmuel, like the story that we saw involving Rabbi Shmuel, v'lei noilad. That would be what we've learned in the past, newly developed circumstances that were not present at the time of the initial vow, the Enposkim and Olad, and most authorities hold you cannot absolve a vow based on Nolad. V'hadar komapik myself ilu hechot inasis noa ayodeki shiposkimlo. And then we are taught this story where that very phenomenon is the basis of absolution from a vow. The very case of a girl who was initially uncomely and made attractive. The Gemara responds, Chisure mechasra v'hachi katoni. The Mishnah, as we have it, is abbreviated. But in order to appreciate its real understanding, understand it as follows. Rabbi Shmuel Oimer, Afilu ki'uravanasis noa. Rabbi Shmuel actually disagrees with the previous opinion. He represents a new opinion. According to Rabbi Shmuel, as the Ran explains, you can pesach benolad. We saw this very point as a machlokes tanoim, and Rabbi Shmuel agrees with the opinion that you are poseach benolad. The Gemara continues, and as a result, even if she had been unattractive at the time of the vow and was subsequently made attractive, or shcheir venasis levona, ktsara venasis haruka, all of the examples that we saw in the Mishnah, when the change take place, even though the change is subsequent to the time of the vow is absolved. And the end was v'itira Rabbi Yishmael. There's a comment made in the Rosh that we'll appreciate a little more when we go further in the Gemara, but if you look at the Rosh at the bottom line, v'itira Rabbi Yishmael, t'kosavar kevan shichim liaposa Rabbi Yishmael, according to the Rosh explanation, which might be different than the explanation we saw in Rashi. The Rosh says that Rabbi Yishmael's opinion was, since she had the potential of being made beautiful, she's not considered ugly from the outset. From this approach, it would seem that you're not dealing with a case of nolad whatsoever. The Ran, on the other hand, as we explained before, said that he, Rabbi Shmuel, holds, yes, poschin benolad. This point, of course, is something that one would want to research on another occasion. Let's continue in the Gemara. We turn to Omid Beis. We have a brisa that, we'll say, elaborates on the Rabbi Shmuel story with the girl that he beautified. Tana Shein Teitevis Hoysa La. She initially had a false tooth. The Oso Lo Rabbi Shmuel Shein Shel Zahav Mishelo. And Rabbi Shmuel, out of pocket, made for her a golden tooth. Of course, the question of beauty and all is a very subjective matter. So in the context of the Gemara, we are seeing that the original false tooth was something that made her look ugly, but replacing it with a golden tooth, that beautified her. Kishachiv Rabbi Shmuel posach le'alu savdona ochi. When Rabbi Shmuel passed away, so a eulogizer said as follows: "Benois Yisrael, Rabbi Shmuel b'cheino hamabishchen v'chulei." The eulogizer actually merged what was said concerning Rabbi Yishmael with the text of the pasuk that was used for Shaul from Sefer Shmuel Beis that we quoted on the bottom part of Omid Aleph. You see, we have a marking, and on the side of the Gemara, we have an explanation. The Mivneh, the structural note, indicates that the diamonds are Sidra Shel Maisim, a series of incidents, 1 through 3, Kainim Shiat Nenesli. A person vows to restrict benefiting so and so, that you are not to benefit from me until, we'll see what the stories are. The double underline is featured under the Nosei Mivneh heading, Nosei is the topic heading, with the structural note, Machloikes Tanoim Begisha, we'll see a Tanaic controversy between Rabbi Huda and Rabbi Shimon in their approach to a specific situation, but you see from here a general, might be a specific story, but from this we conclude a general approach. Im aleihem l'shatik pula, is it something for a great rav, a great Torah authority, to l'shatik pula, to cooperate? The lazor the isha l'kaim tnai neder bailo kedei shetia muteres lehenas mimenu. To, as they say, to cooperate with a woman in order for her to fulfill the conditions of a vow, the result of which would be that she'll then be able to benefit from her husband. That might sound a little abstract, but with an example, things will be much clearer. Then turn to the Gemara. Ahu d'amar lo l'tvisu. Man said to his wife, Kainim shiat nenis li, ad she tat'imi tavshilech l'rebi Yehuda u'l'rebi Shimon. I prohibit you from benefiting from me until you give to Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon from your cooked food for them to taste. You can imagine how her food tasted. Well, Rabbi Yehuda told him. Rabbi Yehuda cooperated. He yielded. He compromised his honor. Great Torah scholar. Stooping down to this, civil quarrel, and he tasted the food like the conditions of the vow stated. Omar Kal V'Chomer, and he said the following Kal V'Chomer logic: Uma lasa sholem beinish liishto omro tera. Mind you, in a case where you have a man and a woman at odds with one another. Here, there's a reference to the Parsha. We know Parsha Sota, the married woman suspected of foul play, of immoral behavior, and the woman, when she falls under suspicion, she becomes prohibited to her husband until the Beis Hamikdash ceremony that revolves around this issue. It's called called Parsha Sota, and in the course of that ceremony, the Torah says that the name of the Almighty, after being written on a special parchment, is then erased over some water. What we're saying now is, in general terms, we're not claiming to present all the details of that. That's for Maseches Sota. But in the meantime, one aspect of that ceremony, that ritual, is the erasure of the name of God. And it's erased over water that the woman drinks. And if nothing happens to her, she returns to her husband. And they hopefully will live happily ever after. So, the Kal V'Chomer says, in order to make peace between man and his wife, Omro Torah, the Torah says, Shmi, my name, Shenichta Bikdusha, that was written in holiness, Imochel Amayim, is to be erased over water. In other words, it's scratched off the parchment, the ink that formed the Almighty's name, is scratched over some water, it's essentially erased from the parchment, and she drinks that water. That's Yimoche al hamayim hamaorim. Besafek. There's an issue of doubt here. Was she guilty of foul play or not? Vani alachas kama v'kama. I, says Reb Yudah, in order to preserve peace between this couple, and most likely in a definitive, in a definite sense, all the more so. So, where the Almighty is willing, the Great, the Almighty Himself is saying that let my name be erased in order to achieve, to hopefully achieve harmony between the couple, where you see the Almighty compromising His honor, all the more so me. Rabbi Shimon lo toyim. Rabbi Shimon refused to taste Omar, and he said, Yomusu kol b'nei almono, let all the children of a widow die, val yosu Shimon mimakomo. And Shimon will not move out of his place. And why did he say this? Ki hechi delo lis regli lemindar, so that people shall not get accustomed to vowing. Hahu di Omar Lidvisu. Kainim shiat nenis li adshit taruki boi b'rib shungam lio. Man swears, he vows that his wife shall not benefit from him unless or until she spits upon Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, the Nosi Hador, the leader of the generation. Osus v'rokikov alavushay. She came forth, she spit on his coat, on his garment, v'sharye, and she was permitted. In other words, the vow was thereby released. The conditions were met. Omar le Rav Achami difti l'ravina. V'ha hai lezilusa komechavein. How is this a fulfillment of the condition when the husband's intention was to denigrate Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel? And denigration is not achieved with spittle landing on the victim's garment. It has to land on his flesh. Her spittle landed on his garment. Omar lei, so Ravina answers, Meirak almone drabshim liel zilusa rabsahi. Spittle on the garment of the great Rabshim liel, who is not a member of the rank and file of the population. He is head and shoulders above everyone else. He is the leader of the door. He's leader of the generation. Hence, spittle on his garment is a great denigration. And hence, the conditions, the intent of that husband were certainly met. Hahu d'omar lo l'dvisu kainim she'i at nenes li ad she'tiri mum mo'um. Now the word mo'um means anything. Achitari mo'um yofe shebech l'Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi. Again, husband says, you will not be entitled to benefit from me until you show Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi anything that is positive about you. You can imagine this husband's perception of his wife. Omar Lohem. So Rabbi Shmuel, who is expected to discover something pleasing or positive about this woman, he says to them, Shema Roshanah, maybe she has an attractive head. Omru lo, they told him, Skalgal, it's round, or it's ball shaped, it's round, it's not something attractive. Shemo Saira Noah, maybe she has beautiful hair. No, Doimila Nitse Pishton, it looks like flax plants. Sheva Inel Nois, maybe she has pleasant eyes. No, Trutos Hain. The Ran explains Trutos meaning they're circular, they're round. Shemos Neo Nois, maybe she has pleasant ears. No, Kfulos Hain. The Ran says they're large, oversized ears. Shema Chuitmana, maybe she has a pleasant nose. No, Bolum Hu. It's the expression that you see in the Mephoshim, it's Sosum, it's sealed. Shema Sifsoiseha Nois, maybe she has pleasant lips. No, Ovos Hain, they are thick. Shema Tzabora Nois, maybe she has a pleasant neck. No, Shokutu, it's very short. Shema Kresona, maybe she has a pleasant stomach. No, Tzavahu, it's inflated, it's bulging. Shema Ragleonois, maybe she has pleasant feet. No, Rechavos Kishalavza, they're wide or flat like that of an avos. An avos is a goose. Shema Shmonoi, maybe her name is pleasant. Lichluchis Shma, her name is Lichluchis. Lichluchis means filthy, ugly. Omar Lohen. So Rabbi Shma says, oh, Yofe, Kairin, I saw Lichluchis. Shemu Chleches Bemumin. Actually, she has a very fitting name, a very appropriate name, and hence the term Yofe. Well, she's appropriately, nicely called the Chluchis. She is full of blemishes. Visharya. And with that, the vow was absolved. Her name was Yofe. And the original vow said that something positive about her should be shown to Rabbi Shmuel. And by presenting her name, that fulfilled the condition. Hahu bar Bovel, the Solik La'aro the Israel, Nosevitza. There was a man from Babylonia. There was a language spoken in Bovel. I'm hesitating to use the term Aramaic. We'll just say a certain dialect of Aramaic, or we'll just call it the Babylonian tongue. And the language spoken in Bovel, we'll see in this story, had words that in Israel, in the Eretz Israel, in the land of Israel, speech, language, similar sounding words, but with totally different meanings. That's why I suspect that you're dealing with different dialects of Aramaic. So a man from Bavel went to Eretz Israel, Nosevitza, married a woman from Israel, Omar Law, and he said to her, Bashili li tre talfi. Please cook for me two talfi. Rashi has two approaches to this. So if we look together in the Rashi, about a little more than halfway down the Rashi commentary, Bashili li tre talfi, shnei ragle behema. Cook for me two talfi. The word, even in modern Hebrew, talafayim, has to do with the feet or hooves of animals. So he's asking, cook for me two legs of a behema, of an animal. And what did she do? The Gemara says, Bashilo le tre talfichi. And she cooked for him two lentils, two lentil beans. As Rashi says, Ubishlo shnei adoshim, shalohoysa makeres v'lishayni shalohem b'Eretz Yisrael, lohoyu to'anin kach. She, being from Eretz Yisrael, did not recognize the language of the Babylonians. So that when she heard talfi, that word in Eretz Yisrael was a reference to lentil beans. So what did she do? She cooked up two beans. The Rashi says, "V'is digarsi bashili tre tlufchi." It's a different version where the husband requested, "Cook for me two tlufchi klomar." What he meant to say, "Ma'at adoshim," a little bit. Shekein adam noig loimar. That's the way people speak. Cook up the. When they want to say a little bit, they say two. V'i savra d'shtei adoshim komar lo. And she thought that he meant literally two. V'bishlo shtei adoshim bilvad. V'lo rosa l'shanei salvorov. She didn't want to deviate from his request. Of course, she thinking that he was referring to two lentil beans. Well, you can just imagine she brings a plate with a possibly with a silver cover, bowl covering it, reveals what's underneath, and lo and behold, there are two lentil beans. Rosa halo, and he got angry at her. Lamachar, next day, Omar law, Bashili li griva. The word griva is a, if you translate the word, it would be a, it's a certain measure. Now, as far as quantity of food for someone to consume, it would be a large amount for an individual consume, that particular amount. The Rashi explains, V'rosacha lo, l'mochar malo, I amino lo, nami, trey tavid li, if I tell her, make for me two, kesmo, like I did yesterday, she's going to come out with literally two. V'yamar lo, bashili griva, mido gedola. He then said, well, cook up for me a griva, which is, in effect, a large amount. T'savar ki hech de titrach lo, de milsa, v'lo, t'vashel, Ella Kade Suda. He figures that by requesting a tremendous amount for her to cook up, it'll be too much work for her, and the result will be that she'll prepare a normal amount. But what happened in the story? So the man requested a griva, and the next day, lo and behold, Bashila le griva. She prepared literally this very large amount. Omar law, Zili Aisi li tre butsini. Husband requests of her, bring for me two butsini. Rashi says that in the Babylonian tongue, it's a reference to a certain type of vegetation. Two avatichim. We mentioned that you can see this in the Rashi, but only if you learn the Bach in Ois Nun along with the Rashi. So the husband is asking for her to bring two butsini, whatever it is, whatever that type of vegetation is, if it's two melons or two pumpkins or what have you, that's what he asked for. Aslis the icy lay tray shruggy. What did she do? She brought him two candles. Once again, the word butsini in Eretz Yisrael language is two candles. Omar le, Omar lo, Zili Tavriason al Resha Debava. Husband says, take the two candles you brought, and he's quite upset. He wanted some food, and she brought these two candles, and he says, go smash them al Resha Debava. Now, what is the husband's intent? Go break them at the entrance of the doorway. The Abava is a gate. It's as if he's saying, break them at the top of the gate. Well, the woman goes, have a Yosef Bova ben Buta above the Kadoyin Dina. Lo and behold, she goes to the gate, and there is the great Torah sage, whose name was Bova ben Buta, and who was sitting judging people at the gate. The gate, and when you speak about gates of cities, that's where the court used to sit. And Bova ben Buta was sitting there. And what was the husband's instructions? Go smash the candles, Aresha Debova. Well, Aslus Vitavis Yason, Areshe. She went and smashed these candles over Bova ben Buta's head. Probably hurt a bit. Omar lo, Mohadein de Abdis. So Bova ben Buta asks, what are you doing? Omra le, she says, Kach Sivani Bali. This is what my husband ordered me to do. Omar. Bava says to her, Im asit ritzon ba'alech, if you have fulfilled your husband's will, amokoim yoytzi mimech shnei bonim kebava bebuta, the Almighty should bless you with two sons like Bava ben Buta. Obviously a great brocha, a great word of praise concerning a woman who is so devoted and so compliant with her husband's wishes. Before we conclude, as you can see with this, we also end the ninth perek of Nedarim, but before we conclude our recording, let us remind you that if you wish to Access Marked Gemaras. We can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.